Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Henry Jansen. Henry, welcome. It's great to have you with me.
Gloria, great to be here with you.
We start at the beginning, and I don't know a whole lot about you, but I do know, first of all, you were not born in Portland. In fact, you were not even born in the United States, if I understand correctly. Tell us about where you took your first breath.
Right. I'm from Winnipeg, more affectionately known as Winterpeg. But up in Canada, right in the center of Canada, you know, just above North Dakota. When I say that to Americans, I don't want to say it in a negative way, but I remember going on a motorcycle trip back in California and explaining to somebody in California where Manitoba is, and I said above North Dakota, and they go, where's North Dakota? Anyways, but yeah, from that cold land up there.
How many siblings do you have, and where do you fit in your family?
I've got four sisters, and I'm right in the middle.
Did you ever wish, maybe especially as you were growing up, that you had a brother?
No, not really, because my neighbor across the street, 2 years older than me, we were best buds pretty much our whole life. We were still friends. And so I actually spent a lot of time with him. I was like a blood brother, essentially. And we did, we pricked our fingers and we exchanged our blood. So yeah, we were like brothers. I mean, I spent summers at their cottage. So we were very close. It was really great, actually. I had four sisters. They did a lot of stuff for me. I mean, if you ask Laura, she hates it. It's like, I'm the prince. I need to change that. That's not good. Anyways, so no, I never really wish I had a brother, because I had this great neighbor across the street.
And let's go ahead and get his name.
Rolf. Rolf Gretschmann. Just talked to him like on Thursday.
Tell me about some of the fun things that you did growing up in Winnipeg. Now, did you live right in the city? Were you in the suburbs? Give us a little lay of the land.
Right. Well, I was born pretty much in the city. We lived across from the hospital. And so I was born in downtown. But I think at age one, we moved to the suburbs. And that's where I grew up my whole life, for the most part. So yeah, the suburbs were, you know, and there's tons of Mennonites there. But yeah, in the suburbs of North Kildonan, there's like, within a 5 mile radius, there's like 10 Mennonite churches. It's kind of Menoville.
So what do Mennonite children do for fun?
And so the interesting thing is, so, you know, obviously our family Mennonite, and we're very Mennonite, and our first church we could walk to, it was like 5 minutes away. So very much in the Mennonite culture, you know, choral stuff, music was a big thing. I played accordion actually first growing up. I actually was on TV a couple of times with the accordion, but I don't play it anymore. But so a lot of the Mennonite traditional things and growing up in the church and youth and so on. But my neighbor across the street, well, they're Lutherans, and their parents actually did join Mennonite churches. So they became baptized Mennonites. And my buddy also in my church, he became Mennonite, and same with one of their siblings. But I had this mix. They were Lutheran. They actually came also from the same ancestry, or let's say they immigrated same as my parents from the Ukraine. So they had a similar background. They were like machinists. They ended up like, there's two brothers and the dad, they bought a machine shop. So a lot of my life was spent with them, and we did a lot of motorsports. So we did like water skiing and boating and snowmobiling, and we all had motorcycles. So that, and then a lot of canoeing, a lot of outdoor stuff and sports. So those are kind of, I would say, the sports, and then the music thing in church were kind of, and cross-country skiing, downhill skiing. Even though we're on the prairies, we would drive 3 hours, leave 5 o'clock in the morning and get on these icy hills. And then when I got older, in my 20s, we would once a year go out to the Rockies, like Banff and stuff like that. And we'd go skiing, alpine skiing. But cross-country skiing was fairly big too. So yeah, just the whole range of things. It was a lot of fun.
I have to go back to this accordion. It was one of the things that I dreamed of doing. In fact, I had a little toy accordion when I was younger. I can still sort of see it. How did you get interested in accordion?
Well, that was my dad. And I don't think I put up too much of a fight, but yeah, it was my dad's suggestion to play accordion. So I played accordion probably till grade six. I think that's kind of where it ended for me. And my cousin also played accordion. He kind of continued on. He actually played at our wedding. you know, a wedding, we had a reception, and there's the circle games. And so he was in the middle of our circle games playing accordion. So it was kind of cool. But accordion was a pretty common instrument for Mennonite kids to play at that time.
Where did you play? Now, you mentioned TV. We want to hear that story. But did you play in church, in school?
I do remember playing in school once. And I don't think I really played in church, though. In church, really, it was more, you know, guitars and piano and stuff like that. Not so much accordions. Although I remember there was one kind of older group that did have like ukulele and accordion stuff. But yeah, it was school. And then, yeah, there was like this talent show. It would be on Sunday evenings, like at 6 o'clock. It was a local TV station and they would have local talent kind of thing. And so my accordion teacher got me into that. So I played on there a couple of times.
What kind of music were you actually playing?
You know, I remember this one. It's called like the Boogie Woogie something. but I don't remember too many of the songs, but it was like waltzes. And I remember this Boogie Woogie kind of thing. So yeah, mix of fun, lively, and folk and waltzes.
Now in your sports, well, first you said your motorcycle. Again, I love motorcycles. Tell me about how you got interested in riding motorcycles.
Yeah, I guess so I played hockey till grade 7, and then it got really rough. I remember in my practices, like, this guy on my own team just rung my bell, and, you know, just in a practice, and it still was getting pretty rough. So I said, you know, I think I'm done with organized hockey, at least. Then I got into dirt biking. So I don't know how I ended, like, my brother-in-law, I did a lot with my older brother-in-law. My second sister got married pretty young. And so me and my brother-in-law did a lot of stuff together. So somehow I got and bought a motorcycle in grade 7. And I worked with my dad, so I always had money in the summertime. So, yeah, I bought a dirt bike in grade 7. And then he bought a dirt bike. And then my cousin bought a dirt bike. And then so the three of us did a lot of dirt biking through middle school. And, yeah, I kind of kept my dirt bike pretty much into high school. Yeah, through high school. So I had a dirt bike, and then I bought a street bike in high school and I had a car. So like I said, I kind of had money because I worked with my dad. So yeah, we were into motorsports and things like that.
Where were you riding your dirt bikes?
Oh boy, that's another story, I guess. For the most part, so my brother-in-law was a little bit older. So he had his driver's license. So, you know, we'd go with him. We got a trailer. We'd go out. There's a lot of sand pits, gravel pits around Winnipeg, and there's sand dunes. Actually, if you go about 45 minutes north, there's a huge beach and it's all sand dunes and stuff. So we'd ride through those bushes, essentially like forest roads. And then of course we did the illegal things, just driving out of our back lane along the power lines, and then we get out into the country. So we did those kind of things, and sometimes I'd end up driving on the streets, which I shouldn't do. And my first time on a wet road with a dirt bike with knobby tires, I just touched the brakes and I laid it down on its side, and I pretty much scraped my side up pretty good. Yeah, so those kind of things.
That was going to be my next question. Any injuries?
No, luckily, I was really fortunate. I mean, nothing major. Like, you know, I caught a branch actually inside of my, kind of right beside my eye. That could have been major damage, but I remember that was out in that dunes area. So I was bleeding and, you know, had to get it taken care of. So we went to there's like this trailer, this like hermit guy. And we said, hey, do you got any Band-Aids or anything? And he's like, oh, I can help you with that. He takes me over to his sink and he opens the drawer underneath the sink and pulls out this bottle of Javix and takes this dirty rag from the sink and loads it up with Javix and puts it onto my cut, and it just burns like crazy. But yeah, that was one fun story where you get this crazy hermit that put Javix on my cut there.
But that did the trick? I mean, you didn't get infected?
I didn't get infected. So yeah, it did the trick.
So did you go to public school?
I did, yeah. I went to River East Collegiate High School.
And as you were getting up into those teenage years, were you involved in any other than maybe sports kind of things, extracurricular activities just at school, any clubs or anything like that?
Yeah, no, not really. It was, you know, youth we did. And then just, you know, hanging around with a lot of friends and our motorcycles and our cars. And really, that's so I really didn't do any extracurricular stuff. Like, my parents, really simple people, they didn't really push us academically that much. They just said, you know, make sure you graduate and make sure you get a job and get married. That's all they wanted from us, kind of thing, very low expectations. So yeah.
So before I ask the next question, I have to know, what was the first car that you actually bought?
Right. It was a 74 Toyota Celica.
So not a hot rod, really.
No. Well, and that's another, I guess, that's another story. So I did always want to get a hot rod, but the whole gas thing ended up, we all ended up getting motorcycles. Yeah, I always did want this. There's this one guy in our high school that had this 72 Camaro, Les Chabot. And I really wanted that car, actually, but I never got it. And so, actually, I bought it later in life, and I've got Marble City in my garage right now that I restored.
What is it?
It's a 72 SSRS, like Camaro. Like, you're going to edit this part out, right? Just to let you know.
Well, we're not giving your address, so you won't be robbed. That's all I can guarantee.
Not for that. I got a car in front of the door. Nobody's going to be able to rob it, but... I just know having a muscle car isn't the coolest thing nowadays, but anyways.
But dreams come true, obviously.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, I bought the car without any powertrain in it, so I put like a new powertrain in there and everything. So just doing that with the boys was really a lot of fun.
So as you were graduating from high school, what was coming next? Did you have any idea? Did you have aspirations?
No, I really didn't have much guidance. So I remember sitting in the kitchen table and my brother-in-law, and I was actually thinking to go there's a Canadian Mennonite Bible College, which is now CMU, Canadian Mennonite University. I was thinking, well, maybe I should kind of pursue that, something with theology. And my brother-in-law said, well, I don't know. That doesn't sound like he was really practical, which is a good thing. He was an electrician. And he said, I don't know if that's such a good idea. I'm like, okay. And I always liked sciences. So I decided to go into mechanical engineering technology. So that's like a 2-year, it's kind of like a community college thing. So I did that after high school for 2 years.
And that was right there in Winnipeg?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you continued to live at home during that time?
I did. Yeah. I mean, I lived at home for a long time, actually. Laura's like, seriously, you're still at home? And my dad was really, so like I said, my parents are really low expectations, just really chill, like, yeah, so we, you know, our family was so really harmonious kind of family. And I, like Laura says, like, there's something wrong with your sisters. They're not telling me the truth. Like, they're always like, there's no arguments. There's no fighting. And there's like, there's something strange here. It's like, no, that's just the way we are. So, yeah, I stayed at home. And even when I got a job, like, my dad was, well, save money, like, live at home. I'm like, yeah, okay. And because I had a bedroom downstairs, that was my own little bathroom, shower, everything was downstairs. And my parents let me do what I wanted to do. And so, yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm good with living at home. So I did. Yeah.
You've mentioned Laura a couple of times. That's your wife.
My wife. Mm-hmm.
When did she come into the picture?
So like I mentioned, like music was a pretty big thing. And I sang in the choir at our Douglas Mennonite church. And she was doing practicum. So she was attending Canadian Mennonite Bible College at the time. And so for part of her practicum was to be our choral director. So she was our choir director. And of course, I kind of liked her. I thought she was pretty cute. And so, yeah, I asked her out and of course she turned me down. She said she was too busy because like at that point I was working and she was in school. She was busy. And anyways, we ended up having quite a few common friends between like my friends and my cousins. There's like a group of us that kind of hung out and she was also part of that. And I think, I mean, the story she tells is the first time I made an impression, we went to Oktoberfest once, and I was wearing my German Lederhosen, which I burnt since then. But yeah, she remembers when I was wearing my Lederhosen with, you know, a big group of us out there at Oktoberfest. Yeah.
So was she from Winnipeg?
No, she was from Calgary. So, I mean, her story was definitely different. She was like, when she turned 18, she was like, I'm out of here. So CMU or CNBC... yeah, they had people that would go, you know, just like we do nowadays with colleges, right? They go across the country. And so they were at her church and they talked about the programs in Winnipeg. So she went to CNBC right after high school. And she was living in Winnipeg right after high school.
So that's how she happened to get connected with your church. And
right, yeah, through the practicum study that she had at CNBC.
So after you finished these 2 years of tech school or whatever you called it, what kind of a job did you get? Did you have a specific kind of an area in mind, or was it just like, let me just go get a job with my new skills? How did that happen?
Right. Yeah. I didn't have too much in mind. So my first job was at this really crazy little fab shop. They made aerators for grain bins. So they're big fans that you would put at the base of your grain bin and blows air through there to keep the moisture out of the grain so it stays longer. So I did that for a year. That was interesting introduction to like foul language, because, you know, especially these small places, I remember working with the foreman quite a bit. So I did like designs for this and drawings for these fans. And so it was an interesting experience. But anyway, it was a really small, kind of hokey little place. So I was there for a year. And then I worked at a place called Monarch Industries. They do like castings and machinings. And they had some products also, like cement mixers and hydraulic pumps and hydraulic cylinders. So yeah, I worked there and I didn't know at the time, but they are actually related to me. Like, so my mom is an ENDS, and there's an ENDS book. And I found out when I went through that ENDS book that they actually, like, I don't know, probably like fourth cousins or something like that. But they're actually related to me. So anyways, they're Mennonites and they had a pretty substantial business, but yeah, it was really cool. I worked there for like 4 years and a really great experience there. You know, like the leaders, you know, the VPs and the presidents, they're all like brothers, the Claussen brothers. And again, kind of the whole Mennonite culture thing, they're big into coral and all that kind of stuff. I remember them talking about, yeah, we're going off to like Winnipeg coral, this or that kind of thing. So it was a really good environment. It was really, yeah, I enjoyed working there. But at the same time, I was kind of, I always have questioning mind. I always like want to do more. So at some point I was like, I want to learn more. And then I decided to go to university at age like 26.
And where did you go?
I went to the University of Manitoba and took mechanical engineering. And so I remember, well, first of all, I wasn't sure, like, can I do this? And so I had taken a couple of night classes, took calculus, and I did fine. So I thought, maybe I can do this. And at that point, I just started dating Laura. And I remember talking to my parents and telling my dad, it's like, yeah, I think I'm going to quit my job and then go to university. He's like, what? Why would you do that? Like, you got a job, you got a girlfriend, maybe you'll get married. You got it. Like, don't mess it up. Like, why would you do that? I'm like, yeah, no, I think I want to go to university. Anyway, so yeah, I went to university. I was, like I said, 26 at the time. And kind of just plowed through 4 years of mechanical engineering.
So it was 4 years.
Yeah, I could have taken credits, but it's really different. I'm glad I did what I did. So I did take calculus and so on in the technology 2-year diploma thing, but it's totally different. Like when you take it in the 2-year course, it's really just you memorize a whole bunch of stuff. When you take it at university, it's like you derive the stuff and you really understand it. So, and I did better in university than I did my community college because I was probably more mature for one. I thought I wasn't that immature when I went to community college, but a little bit more mature and probably better study habits. But I really enjoyed, like, I always like to know why things are the way they are. So, yeah.
So it sounds like maybe you had more of a focus by then. You had had some experience and you kind of had some idea what you needed to get so that you could move forward.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, I probably understood a little bit more that, well, I enjoyed the area that I was in and still I liked working on cars. And so I still, yeah, I enjoyed that whole field and I liked science and technology.
So were you living at home?
Yeah, I was still living at home. Yeah, I went to university. I was still living at home, like 26 living at home. It's like, what? Like most people's like, there's something wrong with you if you're 26 and still living at home. But I was like, well, like I said, I could do whatever I wanted and I could save money. It's like, what's wrong with that picture? Like, you know, there was no drawbacks as far as I'm concerned, only benefits.
I think you were just ahead of the curve on that, because I think a lot of young people are in that position at this point, which is a little different than what it was when you were growing up, but you had it right. Figured out. Yeah. Saving money. Hello. The meals were probably pretty good as well.
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, mom's cooking and, you know, Fleischbrüche and it was great.
Well, at some point you ended up in the United States. There must be a story there. Tell me.
Sure. Yeah. Actually we got married like halfway through college. Both Laura and I were actually, she started off, like I said, at Canadian Mennonite Bible College. And then she then went to University of Manitoba. So she got her, I don't know, choral degree or something at CNBC. And then she went to University of Manitoba to get her education degree. And so we were both going to university. We started at the University of Manitoba at the same time. So 2 years in, we decided to get married. And that's when I finally moved out. I said, okay, well, like, do you want to not live with me in my parents' basement? Like, isn't that awesome? No, I never said that. It was pretty obvious that, yeah, we need to move out. Anyway, so yeah, we moved out into, it was really our pastor who had found this apartment that had reduced rent for, I think it was because we're students, I guess, but it was really good rent, a really nice little apartment. And, you know, just 10-minute walk from university, just a little bit off campus. And so, yeah, we started our life in that apartment near the University of Manitoba.
So if you then, started together, you must right, have sort of ended about the same
right,
time.
Right, right. Yeah.
Well.
The question was, how did I get states? Okay. So yeah, we graduated 2 years later, both of us. We both got jobs. You know, she was teaching music, and actually she taught music in a town about an hour south. So she would commute, like, for the first couple of years, she commuted an hour. It's like just crazy. And if you can imagine Canadian winters. So yeah, I got a job at a bus company. It's called New Flyer. And started working there, designing buses. And then I ended up really getting a cool, like, for some reason, they chose me to kind of lead this team to develop this new bus. And so they sent us to Europe, to Netherlands, their parent company, for a couple of months. And then I started with the team designing this new bus. And that was 4 years. And then after the 4 years of designing the bus, it was just, that's the pinnacle of my career, actually, in terms of designing. It was like, I designed the whole structure and fuel tanks and stuff from that I shouldn't be designing, like bumpers, because they looked really terrible. It's like, seriously, you should not have had me design those bumpers. They're terrible.
These are public transit buses kinds of things?
Right. Yeah, the city buses that you would see here around in Portland. We sell, they're the largest manufacturer of city buses in North America. And yeah, since then, and that was a really great experience. It was owned by this Dutch guy, Mr. Jan de Nelsten. And he was amazing. You know, he said, get out in the shop floor. If there's a problem, you're an engineer, get your hands dirty, you know, figure out what the problem is. And sent us to Netherlands for 3 months. And I led a team there. So I had.
So Laura went with you?
Yeah, actually she did. She went with me, and it was me and two other guys. And these guys were both fresh graduates. But one guy was amazingly smart, like the smartest guy in mechanical engineering. And so led those guys. And yeah, Laura was there for 2 months because actually she was expecting Luke, our first child. So she had to go back a month sooner because, you know, the window of when you have your child a couple of months before that. So she went back, and then I came back in the summer. And then, I did that project for 4 years. And after that, they said, well, why don't you be the manager for hybrid buses? I'm like, well, and then we started thinking, just Laura and myself, is like, do we want to spend our whole lives here in Winnipeg? You know, it was really good for me. I liked everything, but I am definitely kind of like a little bit of an explorer type person. So I said, well, yeah, I think let's kind of move and see where we can go. And I said, well, how about Detroit? And she's like, no way, we're not going to Detroit. I'm like, okay. So we looked west, and we looked at truck manufacturers because it's related to buses, you know, commercial vehicles. And so Western Star in Kelowna, British Columbia was an option, and Freightliner was an option. I remember seeing the president of Freightliner at the time at a Society of Automotive Engineers conference. And so I'm like, he sounded pretty interesting. And then we looked it up where it was. And at that time we were into windsurfing. And so, you know, Hood River, right, is like an hour from here. And we had gone to Hood River before we started talking about this. So both Laura and I were into windsurfing. And so we're like, oh, there's Hood River. That's cool. And we thought Kelowna, we just wanted to live into a larger cosmopolitan kind of area. So that's why we ruled out Kelowna, Canada. And so, yeah, I applied and they flew me down and had an interview. And actually they called Laura first. Like when they offered the job, they offered it to Laura. She calls me at the hotel and she goes, they offered you a job. I'm like, what? What do you mean they offered me a job? So I was like, yeah, this John Beeson guy just gave me a call and told me that they're offering you a job. I'm like, oh, cool. Okay. So anyways, yeah, they offered me a job, and yeah, that was in 2000. And at that point, so that was with our second son. It was like, you know, really crazy things. So Micah, so this was like spring of 2000. And yeah, it was, you know, that's an interesting story in itself. Like, because we, you know, we wanted to have a second one, and it wasn't happening. So I joined the Sunkist Club. Snips for men, you know, no more kids. So I'm laying on the couch, got my frozen peas, and Laura comes in there with a little stick, and she's like, pregnant. So Micah's our miracle baby. That was done. So yeah.
So she got pregnant just before you had your vasectomy.
Just yeah, exactly. Yeah.
God works in amazing ways.
Yes. That's why, you know, Micah is God of strength kind of thing. So that's one reason we called Micah. So got the job. I moved out in like June, and then Laura came out like in October of 2000, came out to Portland. And
you've been here ever since.
Been here ever since.
So it sounds like you'd done some traveling around. And so you had some sense, like you said, you already knew about windsurfing and Hood River. So when you decided to come to Portland, you had some sense of kind of the area you were coming to?
Not really. I mean, we knew Hood River, but we had never made our way to Portland. You know, I had made a trip, I guess, like right out of high school back to the motorcycles. There's four of us from a church, we're all Mennonites, and we all had motorcycles. And my best buddy didn't come. He regrets it to this day. So, you know, our trip was down to California, like kind of like diagonal from Winnipeg down to California and then up the coast and then from Vancouver, British Columbia over. But I hadn't really been in like the West Coast that much outside of Canada. Like, you know, we made family trips, but I really didn't know much about Portland, to be honest. But we love the city. I guess we just lucked out more than anything else. Yeah, I really didn't do that much research. But yeah, we feel like, you know, we can't imagine us being in any other city. Like, I've been around, obviously, like, I know a little bit more about the States now. I'm like, we're really lucked out. It's like, this is the spot for us. And the other thing at work, it's easier because it's a German company, Daimler Freightliner. You know, Daimler bought them in 1981. And so there's a lot of Germans there, and I speak German, so a lot of connections there. And they actually bought the company we're looking to, you know, in Kelowna, Western Star. They bought them in 2000. And so there's a lot of Canadians that came down to the company. So, you know, there's a lot of connections at work that made it easier for me. You know, I actually met a couple of people from Winnipeg, actually. One guy, he was my sister's age. He grew up on the same street. He worked for the same company that I did at the bus company. And then he went to Kelowna after that. I didn't know him until in work. So there's all these connections that happened. And so Portland's really become this sweet place for us.
And at some point you found Portland Mennonite Church.
Yeah. And I'd always gone to church, and I really wanted to be part of a church. So that was, you know, my list of things, where to move, like Mennonite Church was definitely on that top list there. So yeah, I came pretty early. Like, I remember when I got here in July, I don't know at what point I came to Portland, but yeah, I remember very welcoming, and with the welcome lunches that we have. Yeah, it was just incredibly welcoming, and it felt good. I mean, it's different than the church I grew up in many ways, but in so many ways, I mean, I just love Portland Mennonite Church. Just the peace and justice, and just the people, the caring, you know, the classic, just the depth. And really that's why, you know, to me, the Mennonite faith is so important, is really the depth of the people and the connections. Like, my parents, you know, they're seniors, and they're in a place where they're with people that they probably didn't grow up with, maybe, but they're from the same, like from the Ukraine, and just that connection and that depth and the authenticity. So anyways, I felt that when I came to PMC. And so, yeah, I was right away. Yeah, this is, I didn't look at any other churches at all. There were two Mennonite churches at the time. There's the one in Gresham. I think I did go there, but yeah, PMC really felt like a good place to be. So the people there were great. Yeah. And I mean, we got here, like Laura got here in the fall of 2000, and we bought a lot where we are now in like this December of 2000 over Christmas. And we built in April. Micah was born in January. So he was essentially in the crib for most of his, you know, first, whatever, 6 months while we're building this place. And Steve Ettinger was our general contractor from PMC. I mean, there was so many things that really came together well. When I think about it, it's like, wow, that's crazy. Like, again, with, you know, having a newborn. And actually, when I got here in August, like, there was a major slowdown in the economy, and they laid off a whole bunch of people at work. I'm like, I was there 1 month, and all this started happening. And so I went and had dinner with the director, and I said, like, you know, what does it look like for me? And he told me that I was safe and I shouldn't have to worry about it. It's like, okay. anyways, it did work out. But yeah, bringing a family over, a downturn in 2000, buying a lot, building a house, having a kid, all that stuff. But I didn't really think too much of it. It's like we just did it. And yeah, worked out. And we love PMC and we love Portland.
Thank you so much, Henry, for taking the time to give us some of your amazing story.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Gloria. It's been fun. And I was thinking to myself, where's Gloria's story? So you'll have to tell me later where your story, and if it isn't out there, then we'll have to get somebody. I'll do it if I have. Somebody should take your story. But I really appreciate what you're doing. It's awesome.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.